In Money and Markets, the theme was the big question. And here's the big question. I put the charts up on the blog. If you look at how the U.S. equity markets and commodities were trading until about 9 months ago, sometime in 2012, what we would see is the central banks inject more, more juice into the system, and then all the risk-based assets, both commodities and equities, would trade up, and they really were trading in tandem. And then, very unexpectedly, we got an unprecedented split with commodities diverging and dropping and U.S. equities staying stronger. And if anything, the commodities drop should signal that that the economy is weakening, so you wouldn't expect equities to go up like that. One of the things we talked about in the equity overview last month is the divergence between copper and U.S. equities. That's an example, although many corporations can benefit from a drop in commodities prices. Example, Starbucks keeps doing well as the price of coffee drops and drops and drops. But we've seen this divergence, and it's become, you know, much greater than expected. And the question is, which is next? Are we going to see them start to commodities reverse and start to merge back in, whether equities dropping or commodities going up? U.S. equities are seriously overdue for a correction. At the same time, there's a possibility they can break through to what I've started to call the new unnormal. We have the head of PIMCO referring to markets now as the new normal. To me, if we break through, it's going to be the new unnormal. When Chuck and I talked in the equity overview last month, the big question is, can a significant amount of capital shift out of the fixed income markets into equities? I refer to this as the planetary debt for equity swap. There's an argument to say that this could happen, we certainly, I think, would be much better off as a society financing with equity rather than debt. One small symptom that things may be pushing that way is up on the blog today. The central banks are reporting that they are buying a significant amount of equities. This is getting pretty scary. So now we've gone from, you know, surreptitious intervention in the equity markets to large-scale covert buying. If the S&P, as I said, if the S&P breaks through 605 to 610 and stays there, then we may indeed be in the new unnormal. And given that we're coming into summer, the old adage is sell in May and go away. That would argue for a correction. But either way, we're coming into a tipping point, whether it's commodities and equities coming back together or we shift into a new paradigm. But we're just going to have to wait and see what happens. Emerging markets relative to the U.S. equity markets have been in the doghouse, and they're beginning to show signs of life. Now, their performance is much more commodities-driven, so it'll be interesting to see which way they go. After getting slammed down $140 in one day into the high 1300s on April 15th, that's the same day as individual taxes were due and the Boston bombing occurred, gold has settled down into the 1400s, closing at 1470 today. Enormous reports of tremendous problems with a physical market clearing at these prices. We've seen, I reported last week, we've seen the premium on 90% silver go from 2 to 3% up to 22% last week, and then reports from dealers that they can't clear at any premium. They just can't get the silver or the gold. Now, If you look back to the tech bubble, we saw the S&P 500 ratio to gold as high as 5.5 at the top of the tech bubble. And then when gold hit its high in September 2011, it hit 0.6. Now it's reversed back and has passed through 1.0 with the S&P approaching 1600, which is almost 130 from where gold closed today. So big mystery, are we in the new normal? We're just going to have to wait and see. But what is happening is, and this is the argument for the new unnormal, is that the financial coup d'etat is over. It has been successful with the people who engineered it between the bailouts and the wars getting enormous amounts of capital. An example that the winners are having a bit of a party with a campaign over. We see the president announced today that Penny Pritzker is announced as the Commerce Secretary. Dennis Bernstein on KPFA Radio has done a very amazing job of documenting her involvement with the predatory lending, predatory lending process. So we have somebody clearly tagged as somebody engineering the housing bubble and having profited on it mightily, being made Commerce Secretary. Again, the good news last week and the last 2 weeks is the gun control lost got stopped and CISPA got stopped in the Senate after passing the House right after the Boston bombing. But as we can see, the trench warfare pushing back on both gun control and CISPA is very scary. I wanted to comment, we've got a lot of questions about what happened in Boston, and I wanted to comment on it, although briefly. Boston was very concerning for me because we're talking about an area between the Harvard University, MIT, Boston University, an area which is, for many years, has been sacrosanct against these types of covert operations. A lot of the most talented people who are being educated to step into leadership positions in the New World Order come through the Boston universities. So Boston has always had a little bit of a bubble, and of course Boston is a major equity investment manager. So to go into Boston with an op like this and prototype martial law in the middle of Boston is pretty chilling. It says nobody, no place is sacrosanct. We had two young men chosen to be the patsies. It turns out they have a very strong mother and family who've done an unbelievably effective job given the absence of training in persuading people that the official story is complete yaya. I posted a video up on the blog of some of the family members saying, you know, this is absurd, this is impossible. We now hear reports yesterday that more conspirators have been rounded up, and I take that as sort of the next step in trying to prove the family wrong. I don't think they expected the family to be as intelligent as they are. But it looks like we're going to need more fiction to hold to the fiction. I'm not going to spend any time trying to figure out what really happened. What you certainly learn, and I certainly learned in situations like this, is you can spend a lifetime trying to figure out what the real deal was. And if you simply watch the patterns of how the incident is used more often than not, you can make a pretty good guess of who might have been behind it. But the lesson learned for all of us is that we need to understand these events are going to keep happening. They work very well for the pro-centralization team. CNN reported this week that 55% of those polled are willing to give up some of their civil liberties to protect themselves against terrorism. I'm not sure I believe these kinds of polls. You know, you can engineer these things one way or another, but it is always depressing to see the extent to which the official story is embraced. I had a great subscriber call me today and said she had a dream that I told her that there were going to be two more terrorist attacks of this kind this year. And I said, oh, I think there are going to be more than two. If you look at the timing of Colorado and then Newtown, then Boston, I think we're seeing a move into a more accelerated speed. One of our wonderful Salary Report teams pointed out that these things don't seem to be happening in the South. And we commiserated that it's probably because there are too many people carrying guns in the South. And it would not surprise me if that's the case, although I'm sure they can move into any place. Fitting right into that theme, we see a story in the Washington Post today about a gun accident happening with children in the South, part of the official campaign to get background checks to apply to inter-family transfers. It's the first time I've ever seen the Washington Post care about poor people in the South. But it's an example of a real big push that's coming. In the Shame on You category, one of the magazines I'll occasionally take a look at and has very interesting articles is Popular Mechanics, that also has some of the worst disinformation in the world. They're famous for a hit piece on 9/11 that was really, you know, definitely goes in the hall of shame on disinformation. But they had a piece on Voyager space probes. The Voyager space probes I find absolutely fascinating. After 35 years, they are now approaching the edge of the solar system, which is, to me, very exciting. The Voyager 2 flew past Saturn in 1981, took a whole bunch of pictures, and that became the basis of Norm Berkland's book, The Rings of Saturn, which is arguably one of the most important books I've ever read. I put several video interviews of Norm Berkland up on the website, including one by Project Camelot, which is very much worth watching. The reason I've always thought that that date was important, and if you look at what Berkland says about the rings of Saturn, he says what they saw in the pictures were spaceships that were 70,000 miles long, made of plasma. So basically, imagine a spaceship that's made of living organic material that were docking and they believed were getting energy from the rings. So you have these huge spaceships sort of juicing up and the rings of Saturn. And these are what are shown in the pictures taken by Voyager 2. So Popular Mechanics says, describes technical difficulties that happened to Voyager 2 when it just happened to be passing Saturn, the implication being nobody could get any pictures. It's probably sort of a kickback on Norm Berglund's disclosures. I believe Berglund, and one of the reasons I believe Berglund is for some inexplicable reason, the mortgage fraud and financial fraud for the black budget just started to go wild right after that point. And, you know, if Berglund's telling the truth, that could be one of the reasons why.